following program is brought to you in living color on
DailyGazette.com or wherever you get your podcast.
The Gazette News Group presents the Parting Shots Podcast. Now, here's your host, Ken Shot.
Thank you, Scott Kesey, and welcome to the Parting Shots Podcast, available wherever you get your podcast. Subscribe today. Thanks for joining me from the Parting Shots Podcast Studio in Schenectady, New York, for the 492nd episode of the podcast. We're getting close to that 500 number. A few weeks away, we'll probably get there early January, I believe. We're not. I'm going to be taking some time off in a couple weeks, so there won't be a podcast that week. But yeah, if I keep doing two a week, I'll get there before you know it. We have another great show for you. We'll talk Union College hockey, men and women, as we usually do every Thursday. The men are back from Belfast, Northern Ireland, where they played in the Friendship Four tournament, finishing runner-up to Miami of Ohio, losing that game 3-2 in the championship last Saturday. They destroyed Sacred Heart 8-1 in the first semifinal on Friday. And they got back into back to the States on Sunday afternoon, flying into Boston's Logan Airport at around 2:15, and they got home on the bus around 6:30. And they've slowly but surely getting their body clocks back to Eastern Standard Time. They did gain the 5 hours coming back from Belfast, but still, as you heard Josh Algy say on Wednesday's podcast, he's been sometimes getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning, so it takes a little time to get used to the time change. But we'll talk about the big games this weekend, the ECAC hockey action, the final ones of 2025. Union will host Princeton on Friday at 7 p.m. and 8th-ranked and pain-in-the-butt Quinnipiac on Saturday at 5 p.m. Of course, that game will be the unofficial first game of the M&T Bank Cup series that I am proposing to the M&T Bank marketing people. Let's get this done, folks. I mean, you heard Josh Housie say he would like to have one, so let's do it. Why not? And you got it because M&T Bank Center in Schenectady and Quinnipiac's home in Hamden, Connecticut, is the M&T Bank Arena. So let's have some fun with that. On Tuesday, had a Zoom conference with the leadership group of Union, Nick Young, Brandon Burr, and Parker Lindauer. We'll get their thoughts on what happened in Belfast, and we'll look ahead to these games on Saturday. The Union women's team will play their final two games of 2025. They'll go on the road, just their fourth and fifth road games of the year. They're going to be at Harvard on Friday at 3 p.m., and they have a 3 p.m. contest on Saturday at Dartmouth. I spoke with head coach Tony Macy and players Stephanie Bork and Maddie Delaney about that. We'll talk to them about the games coming up this weekend as Union looks to get its first road wins of the season. Right now, they've only played 3 games on the road, but they've lost them all. And it's going to be important for them to get some road victories. Drew Emborg, our fine Gazette high school writer, will join us. We'll preview Saratoga Springs football's run to the state championship game in Class AA. They'll take on CBA Syracuse at 6 p.m. on Saturday at the Dome in Syracuse. I was off the top and can't remember the name of the Dome, but I just say the Dome. It's easier that way. And we'll look back on some of the other games involving Section 2 teams in the semifinals last weekend. Saratoga Springs, the only Section 2 team to advance to Syracuse. We'll also talk to Drew about a tough situation involving Section 2 hockey. The on-ice officials and the Section 2 are having a dispute on several matters, including pay, and Drew really does a great job of breaking that down. He's been following the whole situation, so he'll give us some insight as to what is going on and how it's affecting the season so far. And on Thursday, Wednesday, we learned some terrible news. Siena men's lacrosse coach Liam Gleason had a serious fall at his home on Sunday and suffered significant brain damage, and unfortunately he succumbed to his injuries on Wednesday at the age of 41. We'll talk with Gazette Executive Sports Editor Will Springstead, who covers college lacrosse for us. We'll get his thoughts on the tragedy and the life and legacy that Liam Gleason will leave behind at Siena. So coming up, we'll talk Union College hockey, men and women. So stay tuned. You're listening to the Parting Shots Podcast.
Hi, this is Daily Gazette News Group Executive Sports Editor Will Springstead. I hope you and your family have a wonderful holiday season and a prosperous and healthy 2026.
High school sports don't just happen. There's a ton of work that goes into every single athletic event.
And we have our school's athletic director to thank for a lot of it. Thank you.
For scheduling officials so I can always play the game I love.
For ordering quality athletic equipment so I can stay safe on the field.
For mentoring my coaches so they can be the best role models for me.
For coordinating transportation so I can get focused for the big game.
For helping us develop character and learn lessons that will benefit us for the rest of our lives.
Thank you to our AD for always creating a positive experience for us. We'll never forget it.
From all of us at the NIAAA, thank you to every athletic administrator in New York for all you do to enrich the lives of your students. It does not go unnoticed. This message presented by the NIAAA, the National Interscholastic Athletic Administrators Association.
Hi, this is Daily Gazette News Group pint-sized columnist John Norris. I'd like to wish you a happy holiday season and a great 2026.
Welcome back to the podcast. It's our look now at Union men's and women's hockey. We'll start with the men. The men coming off a sweep of Niagara last weekend at Dwyer Arena in Niagara University. Yeah, it is Niagara University. That's an actual dateline. But, the Garnet Chargers won 4-2 on Friday and 5-3 on Saturday. Of course, you heard Josh Howji's thoughts, the men's head coach, on Wednesday's podcast. We talked about the games, including the line juggling that he administered before the Friday's game, and the moves worked out. Kaden Viegas moved from the line with Nate Hanley and Ben Muethersbaugh to Colby MacArthur and Josh Nixon. Brandon Bird moved up to that Hanley-Muethersbaugh line. Josh Nixon with a couple goals on Saturday, as did Brandon Burr. Viegas had a goal in Friday's game and made a nice pass to set up Colby MacArthur on a goal in Saturday's game. We also talked to Parker Lindauer at the media day on Tuesday. Got a warm death of his game and how he ended up at Union and what happened at Maine. Why didn't things work out? Because he's having a great year for Union right now. Talked about how he seems to, when he gets sets up shop behind the opposition net, seems to take a good view of what's going on, see who's open, and that worked out perfectly in Saturday's game where he set up Josh Nixon for his second goal of the game. So Union is heading on the road this weekend again. This time it's ECAC hockey play, the final conference games of 2024. Union will head to Princeton to take on the Tigers at historically cold Hobey Baker Arena. Yes, it's cold. Trust me, I've been there a number of times, and sometimes surprised I still have toes left on my feet. It's going to be an interesting game. For instance, with the new coach in Ben Sire, they pulled off a big upset not once but twice last weekend, knocking off 12th-ranked Ohio State by a pair of 3-1 scores at Hobey Baker Rink. So Union knows its work is cut out for that game Friday. And then they have a quick turnaround Saturday, 4 p.m. game at Quinnipiac, a team they've gone winless in the last nine, including 8 straight losses. Quinnipiac, a little off kilter right now, off to a slow start, 3-3-1 in ECAC hockey play for 10 points and 6-6-1 overall. Not the start that you envision a team like Quinnipiac, who's been one of the dominant teams, not only ECAC hockey, but NCAA hockey. So here's a good time for Union to knock off Quinnipiac and see if they can get a win there on Saturday. Let's hear from Josh Nixon, Parker Lindauer, and Kaden Viegas.
Well, guys, obviously big ECAC hockey games this weekend, the last of 2025 with Princeton and Quinnipiac. You guys coming back from Belfast. I mean, what's the importance this week besides getting ready for Princeton? Is it important to get back to being used to on East Coast time after the trip from Belfast to Schenectady via Boston? They'll start with Nick.
Yeah, I mean, it's important. I think that, you know, yesterday and today, guys are pretty much getting acclimated again. But all the focus is on, like, having these ECAC games and, you know, it's a big opportunity for us to climb in our standings, and, you know, we want to improve our ECAC record this weekend.
Parker?
Yeah, I mean, same as Nick just said, I think the past 2 days we're kind of just getting back to East Coast time, and I don't think it's too hard to get back on that time zone. And then in terms of the ECAC games this weekend, these are two really big games for us. Obviously, we got to start focusing on Princeton first, and can't worry about Quinnipiac. Princeton's a good team, and they've shown it this year, and we're ready to work and bring it to them on Friday.
Yeah, Brandon, a Princeton team that a couple weeks ago swept the North Country teams at home. Kai Daniels had 5 goals in the game against St. Lawrence. What is it about Princeton? I think last year you guys split with them, so what makes them a tough team to play?
We just know they're going to work hard every game they play. They're good defensively, so just being able to show up and play our game is what's going to lead us to success this weekend against them.
Nick, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, we got to find ways to score against, you know, tough defensive teams, and I think that's something that's going to be a focal point for us, and staying in our structure and fixing all the little things that we need to, just, you know, whether it's communication or structure-wise, I think that it's all going to be beneficial for this weekend.
You guys have had a couple of close losses, a tie in the last couple of weeks. What are you guys kind of talking about doing to turn those close games into wins?
I think that
so.
I think that one thing is just like sticking to who we are for a full 60. I think sometimes we can get a little complacent and, you know, take an undisciplined penalty or something like that and kind of get the momentum away from us. So just kind of having our focus on keeping our momentum forward, keeping our offense always on the prowl, and, you know, attacking at all points of the game.
Speaking of you guys, I've been fortunate this year when you haven't scored the first goal, you have a winning record, but are you playing with fire with that, especially when you get back in the conference play? I mean, how important is it to get the first goal of the game and, you know, you guys dictating the process instead of playing catch-up? Brandon, we'll start with you, then we'll go across.
Yeah, obviously getting the first goal is nice, but I think it really doesn't matter as long as you have more goals than the other team at the end of the game. So, but yeah, first goal is nice, but just staying with it when we're down, I think you've done it most this year. So, yeah.
Nick?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a point of emphasis for us to start on time, and I think that's something that we're continually trying to improve on. And like Brandon said, obviously it's nice to start up, but it's a test to our character that we've been able to, you know, come back from being down. But obviously we want to start on time and start on top, you know, these next few games.
Parker?
Yeah, I don't know if I can say it any better than these two. I mean, starting the game off strong is obviously the best case scenario for winning at the end of the day. No one wants to start it off down one goal. And just like Younger said, figuring out a full 60, especially the first 5 minutes of the game, is going to be huge for us this weekend.
I mean, so far in conference play, you guys have not won twice on the weekend. Obviously, having these games at home are going to help, but, you know, Quinnipiac, obviously, we know, is a tough team, as well as Princeton. How important will it be to come away with two wins, and especially since these will be the last conference games for the calendar year 2025? Nick?
They're extremely important. I think, you know, like I said before, we're trying to improve our record and move up in the standings, and the only way to do that is to take these two games. So we're taking them, you know, very seriously, and obviously, we have to take it one at a time. We can't overlook a certain opponent or, you know, look forward to anything else. We got to take Friday night, game at a time, shift at a time to take these two and have two wins.
Now let's talk about the Union College women's hockey team. The Garnet Chargers coming off a sweep of Delaware last weekend. They took a 7-0 win last Friday and a 3-0 try, which was that game was a lot closer. It was 1-0 after two periods, and Delaware had played a lot better in that game than it did on Friday. Stephanie Bork had an outstanding weekend. She had 6 points, including record tying five for most points in a game. She had a goal and 4 assists in the win over Delaware. That was her first goal of the season. And then she added an assist in the 3-0 game on Saturday. Maddie Delaney's goal-scoring and point-scoring streak ended in the Friday game, but she rebounded on Saturday with a pair of goals, and she set the
career record for most game-winning goals in a career with 8. And she's got some more time. I expect at least maybe 3 or 4, 5 maybe for her. She's got a year and a half left at Union, so she can probably put some distance between herself and anybody else who wants to challenge. So Union will be back in ECAC hockey play this weekend. It's the final games of 2025 for the Garnet Chargers. They hit the road just for the fourth and fifth games this season. Union 0-3 on the road so far this year. They'll be at Harvard for a 3 p.m. game Friday and then at Dartmouth for a 3 p.m. game on Saturday. And if Union wants to contend, at least try to get home ice in the first round of the ECAC hockey tournament, they got to win the road games. As I said, 0-3 so far. So really it's haven't had a chance, and the majority of the games have been home this year, but I think it is 8 of the last 14 games or so, or 15 will be on the road, so they have to find some consistency on the road and get some wins and make some noise that way. On Tuesday, had a chance to speak with Stephanie Bork and Maddie Delaney, so let's hear from them and their thoughts on what's coming up this weekend.
Well, guys, your last two games of 2025 road contest, I know you haven't played much on the road this year, but you're 0-3. I'll start with you, Stephanie. How important is it to get some road wins this season?
I mean, yeah, they're important games. We want to end the year on a high note, but also it's a chance for us to move up in the standings and to make noise in the ECAC, and Harvard and Dartmouth aren't easy competition, so we know that it's going to be very difficult for us, but I think if we just stick to our system and play how we normally play and play fast and focus on our transition, then we should be okay.
Maddie?
Yeah, I mean, any game's important, especially right now in our league. I mean, I don't think it's ever been this close. Everyone's really beating everyone right now. So I think no matter if it was at home or if since it's on the road, like, there's still huge games. And like Steph said, we just got to play how we've been playing. I think we've been obviously pretty successful right now. So just sticking with it.
I mean, how important, I mean, Stephanie, last year you had the, I think you had the game winning goal in overtime at Harvard last year. I mean, to go back there, I mean, they seem to be a little bit better this year. So what's going to be the key on Friday?
Yeah, I think every team's better than last year, but so are we. So I think it's just going to go back to playing well defensively and playing within our structure and being able to catch them in transition. I think that's one of our strengths when we play with our speed. So I think it's just going to go back to that and having a lot of shots on net.
Yeah, I know you guys haven't played a ton away from home, but you know, you haven't found a way to win on the road. Are there any specific adjustments you guys want to make when you go away from home, or is it just blocking out noise and playing your game?
I think it's just kind of just playing our game. I mean, it doesn't matter who we play, where we play, what time we play. It's kind of just going back to how we know how to play and just having trust in ourselves and within our teammates and our structure and our coaches. They have faith in us, so it's just kind of going out there and executing, and I think we'll be good.
Maddie, how important is it to, you know, as I said earlier, this year's the last two games of 2025. How important is it to, you know, go into that little vacation there with a good feeling?
Yeah, I think it's super important. I think, you know, it's been first half, we started off hot and then we had a little bit of a lull and now we're finding our way back. So I think just sticking with it and being able to close this first half off with two wins would be huge for us. And obviously we do get a little bit of a longer break, 3 weeks, and I know it'll be good to go home and reset a little bit, but obviously it's huge and we want those two wins.
Maddie, what does it mean to you to have set the record for most game-winning goals in a career at Union? You can obviously add on to that because you're just a junior. You still have a year and a half left at Union.
Yeah, to be honest, I didn't even know that was a thing. I kind of got a puck tossed at me in the locker room. but yeah, it's pretty cool. It's a cool feeling. Obviously, it was a shutout win, so huge, like, props to Emma and Emily for the weekends getting 2 shutouts. So I think it's pretty cool, but just keep going.
Did you feel disappointed you couldn't contribute on Friday night? Everybody else was having fun?
Yeah, of course. But, you know, I was just happy to get the big win. Like, having a game like that, it's always fun. Like, everyone's scoring. I think a few people haven't scored yet, like, this year, like Mal. So we were all super pumped for her and see her Sally on the Jumbotron. So little things like that still make it worth it.
Stephanie, for you, earlier on Tuesday, you were named Defender of the Week. I believe it's the 5th time in your career. Does that mean anything to you?
I mean, not really. Like, you don't do it for the awards, you know. You kind of just do it for your teammates, and you want to win. So you, it's not all about all the points. It's just about playing the right way and playing with, like, within how we want to play as a team. And obviously, it was a team effort. I mean, there was most of my assists were tip shots and like stuff like that. So we had crazy traffic in front of the net. So I just think it was definitely a team effort.
I mean, you're closing in on being the all-time leading scorer. Is that, what does that mean to you at this point? I mean, is that something you think about right now?
I try not to, because if I think about it too much, then I get frustrated with myself. So I kind of just try to play free and just try to play how I know how to play. And I know my teammates have, like, my back and I have their back. So I know, like, if it comes, great. If it doesn't, then that doesn't, like, define me as a player or define anyone a certain way. It's just kind of just if it comes.
Were you getting frustrated not scoring until you got that goal Friday night?
I would be lying if I said no. So it was good to get the monkey off the back, but yeah.
This is for both of you. I know Maddie mentioned you guys hit a bit of a lull there in the middle of this first half of the season. You guys have gotten points in your last four conference games, obviously the two shutouts this past weekend. How much have these last couple weeks kind of done to get the confidence back and kind of get you guys rolling?
Yeah, I think we're all in the right mindset right now, and I think we're in a good spot with our culture and within everyone on the team, and everyone's kind of on the same page. So it's just the coaches have faith in us, so it's just going back to how they want us to play and how we know how to execute and things like that. And I think if we do those things, then we'll come out on top this weekend.
Yeah, I think it was a big thing, like, finding it in ourselves and finding it in the locker room. I think we've done a lot of work off the ice that has helped us on the ice, as well as just looking into more detailed stuff on the ice, like going back and really dialing in on our defensive zone, and that's really given us success. So I think just still focusing on those little things and continuing that throughout the rest of the year will be big.
Wednesday morning, I had a chance to talk with Union Women's Head Coach Tony Macy, so we had a chance to talk about the road games and the importance of these games this weekend, and I closed with his thoughts on his Detroit Lions playing the Dallas Cowboys later Thursday night, and I'm a Lions fan on Tuesday or Thursday, so here's what Tony Macy had to say about his team.
So, Tony, you get ready for the last two games of 2025 for the team. You're going on the road. I know you've only played three road games right now. The bulk of your games have been played at M&T Bank Center. But right now you're 0-3. You go to Harvard on Friday and Dartmouth on Saturday. How important is it to get some road wins under your belt?
Yeah, I think that's important. I think the big thing is looking at who we're playing. You know, where we're at in the standings, and knowing that this weekend is a good time for us to grab some points and move up in the ECAC and try and catch some people that have gotten some better starts than we have in the league and put ourselves in a better situation going into break.
I mean, how important is it to get some confidence on the road to, you know, to get some wins like this, especially in conference play? Because, I mean, we know, you know, it's points are precious.
Yeah, I think going on the road, you got to know that, hey, the other teams are going to try to protect their home ice just like we try to do here. And, you know, we've got to go in thinking, okay, it's going to be a tight game. You know, got to make sure we just play those, you know, one goal good road games. Like, we don't have to try to create a lot of things. We just got to make sure we keep things simple and, you know, play a good road game.
I mean, Harvard looks like an improved team this year. I know you won there last year in overtime. What's different about Harvard this year?
Well, I think they've got a couple kids up front that have some more offense to them. I think their goaltender's been playing pretty well. You know, I think what they lost is similar to what we did last year, minus Sophie. You know, just some older players that played a lot of minutes for them, so they're working through that. But you know, they just played a good Maine team, I think, and watching those videos, it looks like they're playing pretty good, especially on Saturday.
And Dartmouth, I know you don't want to look ahead, but I mean, Dartmouth seems mm-hmm. to be a little bit better than what they were.
Yeah, Dartmouth's another team that, you know, like the ones that had finished in the lower half of the league last year, are trying to move up, right? So all those teams are improving. Dartmouth's another one that's doing the same thing. They got a coaching staff there that's doing a good job preparing them. You know, their big one is they've got a good goaltender in net that keeps them in games. So she gives them a chance, and I think one thing for us is going to be making sure that we can, you know, make life a little bit tougher for her in the games that they've lost. That's kind of what the teams have done. So going to try and follow that blueprint.
Besides the importance of winning on the road, how good would it be to get 2-1 under your belt heading in to a 3-week-long break here before you return in 2026?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, it's good going into break. It's good to have that under your belt, as you say there. You know, going in with 6 points, obviously that's our mentality going in is try to get all six. You know, it pushes you pretty far up the board there when it comes to the ECAC if you do that. So that's what you want to do. And, you know, anytime you beat somebody on the road at the start of the year in a series, you know, it kind of pushes you a game ahead as well. So that's just what we're trying to do, and hopefully we can get that done.
Stephanie Bork had herself a heck of a weekend last weekend. It was 6 points, including 5 in the first game against Delaware, and gets named ECAC Hockey Defender of the Week. She scores her first goal of the season. But just talk about what she has meant to the team so far this season.
Oh, she's the one that we lean on for everything. You know, both on and off the ice, she's a great example kid when it comes to what Union hockey is becoming and what it is right now. So she's done a really good job with that. You know, obviously getting the so-called monkey off her back is a big one. She actually jokingly pulled it off her back when she got back to the bench. So that was good to see that she could laugh about it. But, you know, she's producing, and that's the big thing. And that's one thing we've been talking with her. We're like, hey, don't worry about the goals. Goals will come. You know, it's more just are we producing? And, you know, she's done a really good job of gathering assists and making sure, you know, people around her are better.
Yeah, I was asking her about that on Tuesday. She was laughing. She said, I'd be lying to you if I said I wasn't worried about it. But, and she's closing and also becoming the all-time points leader in Union history. I mean, just what, you think that means a lot to her? At this right now,
I don't think so. I think at the end of the day, it'll mean something. You know, I think for her, she doesn't really look at any of that stuff. Hers is all, hey, I want to win. I want to make sure that the program's left better than what I found it. And you know, I think she's doing that. So, she's just a great kid to use as an example of how to do things right.
Finally, how important is this game Thursday night between the Lions and the Cowboys?
Yeah, it's a big one. We need the Lions to figure things out. Maybe not go for as many fourth downs and not make it. And we need to nullify these Cowboys that think they're pretty good right now.
Well, being an Eagles fan, I'm rooting for the Lions on Thursday night.
Hey, I'm not gonna lie. When the Eagles played them the other night too, I was not rooting for the Cowboys. Not a huge Cowboys fan.
No. I'm born and raised in Philadelphia. You learn from birth to hate the Dallas Cowboys. Like for you, be hating the Green Bay Packers or the Chicago Bears.
That's right. And one of my neighbors is a Green Bay Packer fan, so I lived that one down last week.
Oh boy, that's not good. So.
Yeah.
Gazette High School sports writer Drew Wemple joins me next. We're going to talk high school football. Saratoga Springs heading to the Class AA championship game against the CBA Syracuse at the Dome in Syracuse. And we'll talk high school hockey and the situation involving the on-ice officials. You're listening to the Parting Shots podcast.
Hi, this is Daily Gazette News Group reporter Chad Arnold. I hope you and your family have a wonderful holiday season and a prosperous and healthy 2026.
Physicality,
home to college hockey's elite teams, coaches, and student athletes. ECAC Hockey, 12 programs competing at the highest level. A league where champions are born and world-class professionals are trained. Where history is abundant and a commitment to the cutting edge is unrivaled. The best facilities, the fiercest competition. ECAC Hockey, there's no experience like it.
Hi, this is Daily Gazette News Group Business Editor Stan Hootie. I would like to wish you a happy holiday season and a great 2026.
Welcome back to the podcast. It's the end of the football season this weekend and high school action as one team from Section 2 will be playing in Syracuse at the Dome Saturday. It'll be Saratoga Springs in the Class AA final. A team that's been really rolling and getting hot at the right time, and Drew Wemple's been covering their path to the championship, and Drew joins us now. And what else can you say about this team? I mean, another win, and they're going to get to play CBA Syracuse Saturday at 6 o'clock at JMA Wireless Dome, formerly called the Carrier Dome. I still like the Carrier Dome better than what it is now, but anyway. You saw them play Saturday down at Middletown against Memorick. What'd you think?
Yeah, this team, when they tell you that they value being the underdogs, they mean it, and you've got to take their word for it at this point because they just keep winning. This game against Mamaroneck, they jumped out. First play from scrimmage, they housed a 60-yard touchdown run with Ben Corrier, the state's leading rusher. I mean, they had gone through the day watching three Section 2 teams lose to get before their game, and then they were the lone one standing, and they showed up. They represented Section 2. They did exactly what they've done all year, run the football, play good defense, make some big throws when they need to. And this was just another – they just keep replicating this formula, and it's been so hard to challenge. For me, this means a lot, just, you know, going back a couple years ago when I broke into this industry. They were the first ones that really, you know, kind of opened me up to practice. And I've watched this build up over the last couple of years. And you can really see what they've done, you know, 2-3 years ago is applying now. Piece by piece, they're putting it together. And they've said they want to take advantage. They weren't supposed to be here, but they want to take advantage now that they're here. And like I said, you've got to believe them.
Well, they're going to take on a CBA Syracuse team that won the championships last year over CBA Albany. I mean, they only won 34-14 against Lewis J. Bennett Olmsted last weekend. Of course, they had a 42-7 victory over Elmira Southside in the quarterfinals. What is it about CBA Syracuse that makes them so difficult to play?
I mean, they've only won 40 straight games over the last couple of years. I mean, that's top 15 in the state all time for winning streaks. I mean, they're as good as advertised. They played last year against CBA Albany in that state championship game. One of the greatest football games I've ever seen played.
That was like a buzzer beater or something.
I remember. Hail Mary at the 40-yard line, a play that I know is going to, you know, live forever in infamy over in Albany. But at CBA Syracuse, that's what dreams are made of, a play like that. And if you're Saratoga, the thing to take from that is this team plays till the final whistle. They obviously have all the talent, but once you get into a game, that doesn't matter as much. What matters is who's going to play until the end and give it their all. And you saw it last year from CBA Syracuse. That's what they do. They've won this thing 2 years in a row. They're going for their fifth title in program history. Only a couple other programs have done that. They want to get into that rarefied air. They obviously have the talent to do it, but I mean, it's a one-game playoff. Saratoga just has to do the right things in this one game, and they can pull off an upset.
Well, what's the experience of CBA Syracuse? I mean, obviously, that's an advantage going into this game. They've been here before as well. Saratoga hasn't.
Yeah. I mean, that experience is something when I've talked to some of these players in the lead-up to this game, they know that they're at that disadvantage. They were also at that disadvantage when they played CBA Albany in the Section 2 championship game. And then once you get into the rhythm of the game, it all goes out the window. It's just, you know, everybody's playing the same game. Everybody's a high school student athlete. There will be mistakes. There will be big moments. I mean, it's just the experience, I think, matters more for the warm-up. When they get into that JMA Wireless Dome on Saturday, they're going to walk around. They're going to see some of the games beforehand. They'll get a minute to get their bearings, and I think that is when it's going to – that's when the experience factor is going to play its biggest hand.
I mean, it's not going to be a full for the game. Well, I mean, it won't be sellout, but it's with the dome, it's noisy. So, I mean, how is this is the first game that Saratoga's be playing in the dome. How do they adjust to the surroundings and the noise? Because obviously they don't have the communication system that college football and the NFL do.
Yeah, and that CBA Syracuse team is right from around the corner. They played their sectional championship game here. They played here last week. I mean, they're used to this building. They're used to what comes with it and the atmosphere that comes into it. I think that the noise is just going to be something they process, you know, within that first quarter, those first couple drives. But after seeing the way Saratoga community has shown up for these playoff games, they were standing out there in the rain at Colony for CBA. They've been here. They were at Colony the following week for regionals. They were there last week. They took the two-hour drive down to Middletown. They were there for semifinals. They show up, and they can bring the noise. So don't be surprised if all that yelling and screaming is when Saratoga's out there on offense.
What's going to be the key for Saratoga to win the state title?
I think it's just being themselves, doing what's gotten them there. Obviously, you have Ben Courier, who's leading the state in rushing, over 2,500 on the year, 2,400 yards on the year, closing in on Section 2 record. You've got to get him going early. You've got to win this game up front on the offensive line. I think he's got to have at least 10 carries in that first quarter to really set the tone for what they want to do. And then defensively, obviously, CBA Syracuse is explosive at the skill positions, but they've got an offensive lineman, 6'4", 300-pound freshman, that is getting an offer from Syracuse. So they want to win the trenches as well. I think that's where Saratoga really has to set the tone. They've got to let CBA Syracuse know right on the front line that they're here to play.
All right. What's your pick?
This one's going to pain me to say. It's hard to pick against the two-time defending champs, but I'm going to pick them in another close one. I wouldn't be surprised if we got a 27-21 game, a one-possession score. And now we know, as I mentioned last week, Saratoga's only won one-possession games. But this is a different animal. I'm going to give CBA Syracuse the edge in a close one.
Well, it was not a good weekend last weekend for Section 2 teams. Let's look at Class B, where Glens Falls was defeated by Sleepy Hollow 42-20. Was that kind of a shocker?
It was a shocker, but I think the biggest shock of them all was just the running back performance from Braden Richardson and of Sleepy Hollow. Clearly, that was a talent level that Glens Falls just hadn't seen up until this point. He went for 466 yards and 5 touchdowns. That's
what?
That's right. No, that's an accurate number. And some of them just, they had your head spinning. He had this one cut, and I believe it was when it was a 14-12 game that he broke off for a touchdown. He shook about 3 different defenders out of their shoes with one cut. I mean, he was an outstanding performer. He's going to Rhode Island after this season. I've been told he'd been dealt with a couple ACL injuries in the lead up to the season. Mm-hmm. So that was an emotional performance. It had to be for him and for Sleepy Hollow, who is making history this season. I mean, they just haven't been here in almost 50 years, and now they're going to the state championship game. I mean, that offense is so explosive, and you could see that it just wasn't something Glens Falls has played with this year.
Well, Sleepy Hollow will take on Monroe at 3 p.m. on Saturday. In Class C, and this, having seen the scores of Schuylerville all year, to see them get blown out by Bronxville 49-16, that I don't follow the football that much, but I haven't seen enough with working your Friday nights and the roundups and all that stuff. I was stunned.
Yeah, and I was on the road for that one, driving down for the Saratoga game down to Middletown, and I was seeing scores on my phone, 32-0, you know, 39-0. I mean, it just got out of hand so quickly against Schuylerville. And we mentioned that this Bronxville team was up in Class B a year ago, and they were one win away from making the state tournament. That's how good they were. They've got a running back, Brian Fermato, that is also up at the top of the list for state rushing yards. I mean, they're an explosive offense, and Schuylerville had to know that. I thought the experience, even after losing those seniors from last year's run, the guys they kept around, I thought would really help out in this game. But I think this is just going to be another learning experience for John Bowen and company. I mean, he's shown that they can get back here even after tough losses. So I think this is one they're just going to have to take on the chin with a young team that might have played above expectations this season. And we'll see what happens in 2026 with them.
Well, Bronxville will take on Chenango Forks. That'll kick off championship Saturday at 12 noon.
That's a tough task.
Yeah. And then finally, Greenwich, another team who scored 51 points in their quarterfinal win over Moriah, held to 7 in a 13-7 loss to Tuckahoe.
Yeah. Well, and I think this one for Greenwich, it's just one that they're going to be thinking about for a long time because of the 5 turnovers that cost them that game. I mean, they had allowed 25 points all season. They gave up 13 last week. 7 was by far their season low, and that came on a touchdown with 13 seconds left in the game. So just chances that went by the wayside with 5 turnovers. They dug themselves a hole with 3 in the first half, 3 fumbles alone in the first half, 4 first half turnovers. I think for Coach Lynette and company, I mean, there's a lot to be proud of here. And, you know, their quarterback, Ryan Ingber, he had 900 passing yards this season, as well as 980 rushing yards with 38 touchdowns. Obviously, the circumstances they went through last year to get to the Final Four, now they did it on their own merit this year. I think that's going to mean a lot to the program going into next year. And you look at the roster, 10 of the 32 players this year were seniors, but 15 were freshmen or sophomores. So kind of like we're talking about with Schuylerville, a lot of young guys were staying around this run, seeing what it takes to do it, getting playing time along this journey. So I think this is one that it's going to hurt for you know, obviously this week and going into the holiday season. But when you look at the experience they kept around, I think they should be set up to do this again next year.
It'll be Tuckahoe and Tioga in the Friday championship game. That'll kick off championship Friday at 3 p.m. on Friday. And we'll just mention the Class A championship matchup is Rye and Brighton. That'll be at 6 p.m. on Friday. The only section that only class that Section 2 did not have a team in the semifinals. So, well, let's take our attention from the gridiron to the ice rink, and really a weird situation going on. You've been following this, dealing with the on-ice officials and Section 2. There seems to be a dispute. As far as if you can explain what that dispute is, it seems like it seems to be affecting the play too, because no officials, no games, and it's like that's. Yeah, I feel bad for the players. I feel bad for the parents, and they're being, in effect, held hostage.
Yeah, and so this story kind of came out last Monday. We heard that this dispute was ongoing, and both sides had basically gotten up from the table, and discussions weren't ongoing. Then we had our first cancellation of the year on Saturday. That was a game between Burnt Hills Boston Spa and that merged Hawks team, and it was supposed to be at the brand new M&T Bank Center on Mohawk Harbor. Just think about what a moment that would be for especially those seniors and the players and the teams to get to open their season like that. It doesn't happen because they can't get officials. As of right now, Eastern New York National Ice Hockey Officials Association, they're working with a group of about 5 to 7 active officials out of the 37 chapter members that they have. I mean, they have really reduced their numbers, you know, because of basically what this stems from is the officials agreement that was signed in June. It was starting to get put together in May and then signed in June. ENY, NIHOA, I'm going to shorten it just to save breath.
Yeah.
They were always against this officials agreement, and they were the only ones out of 27 constituents to vote against it. And these constituents represent all the officials organizations that work with Section 2. And the reason they were so heavily against it, and you as the hockey person, I think might be able to kind of explain this a little bit more than I can, is there was a clause added to this agreement that cited disqualification appeal, where now the grounds to appeal a disqualified player were going to change a little bit for not just hockey, but for all sports. But for the hockey officials themselves felt like they were personally attacked by this rule. They said it went back to a situation with a CBA player in 2023 where he delivered a check into the where a player went into the boards head first. He was identified properly, disqualified from a future contest. They tried to appeal it, and it kind of just quieted down after that. But then this was added back into this new officials agreement, and that was really the first kicker for ENY and NIHOA. And they're saying that this clause affects them more than any other sport. From your history, can you kind of pinpoint when that happens?
Well, I think what they're is probably upset about is, with college games and pro games, you have video, so you're able to, if there's a if I think the NCAA now has an appeal process for that, but these high school games are not being televised. Mm-hmm. The only time they're really being televised is when you get to the state section and state level. But how? What can you tell in a replay? If anybody has a replay, I think that's where the officials probably are upset that you're going to have somebody with a video. I mean, it could be a fan for crying out loud, supplying a video. But they feel that their integrity is being questioned, as you said. And there have been times I've seen. And I'll give you an example. Earlier this season, with Union's Ben Muethersbaugh, there was a Union turnover against Clarkson, and the Clarkson player Sean O'Donnell's on a breakaway, and Muethersbaugh swings a stick, hits him in the shoulder, but then the stick rides up and contacts him in the head. So there was a video review on that, and it turned out that with the 2-minute minor was upgraded to a major, and they got a game misconduct, plus. He got a one-game suspension from ECAC hockey. And then a couple weeks ago in a Union game at Colgate, the Union goaltender Cameron Corbett gets cross-checked, and it appeared to be in the face mask. And there was, a video review that Union challenged that there should be a major. It was not upheld. The call stood, the minor call, and what Josh Howji, Union head coach, told me afterwards is what the official said, the stick hit him in the sternum and rode up. Well, I argue that same thing happened with Muethersbaugh, because the blade of his stick hits him in the, O'Donnell on the right shoulder, and then rides up and hits him in the head. And it wasn't a vicious swing. I mean, the cross check that Corpy got was more vicious than what Muethersbaugh got. So, that's why I think there should be some appeal process. But the problem is, I don't cover enough high school hockey. I've covered the state, the section of two championships the last few years. There's no video because they don't televise the games. If they televise the games, then maybe you have video, but you don't have that, and you're relying on maybe the teams shooting the video. And I mean. That's what it comes down to, and I can understand the officials being upset, but sometimes you look at something that you think you see, but it didn't happen the way you saw it.
Yeah, no, and that's absolutely.
And why punish the kid? Because I mean that's what it comes down to.
Yes, and I think the thing for the ENYNIHOA with this particular clause. Was that, more than the fact that they felt like the power was being taken away from them to make that decision, it went against the state handbook, which says that disqualification appeals can only happen for a misidentified player. If a player was, like it says, misidentified in that situation, was disqualified unfairly, I guess. So this officials' agreement had gone against what the state handbook says, and they're the governing body. They have the end-all say. On this, so that had to be readjusted a couple months later over the summer in July and August. Now, at this meeting raises another problem where ENYNIHOA learns that the person lobbying on their behalf when this officials agreement was being ratified was Catskill Board of Education President Jeffrey Holliday. Now, this would technically fall under conflict of interest, is what's being alleged, what's being put out there, is by ENYNIHOA, is that this Board of Education president also then gets to vote on matters of how officials are paid out of the school budget. So they're saying, how is it possible that he can lobby on our behalf, but then also at school board meetings potentially lobby against? So that's where one conflict, arises, and they take big issue with. So they try to get Section 2 to come sit back down at the table. But for Section 2, their statement is this opens up a dangerous precedent for them to set, for them to renegotiate with specific official groupings, opposed to, like they did when the agreement was ratified, where they meet with all the groups. They don't want to just open up negotiations with just one sport or just one group of officials. Now, as this is going on, ENYNIHOA has told me that, and their representatives, that they don't want to punish the kids. They want to get out there and skate. but they also don't want to do it under these circumstances. So they told Section 2 that 75% of their officials were going to abstain from officiating any Section 2 games, whether that's because they do, whether that's because they are taking big issue with the situation, or if it's because youth games pay more and take less time. I mean, that's the other side of this coin here, from what I'm told, is that sometimes there are just other opportunities that are a little bit easier for these refs to get to.
Now, I think you wrote in Wednesday's paper they're trying to get mediation.
So that's where we have arrived now. ENYNAHOA has told Section 2 that they would be willing to continue to skate it while this goes to state boards, more so the education boards and, you know, just up above the State Athletic Association, outside of them, while they process it. If they were to win, they would want $15 each per game on back pay. So they would like to be compensated for officiating under these unjust and invalid officials agreement. Now, Section 2 has said that they're not willing to meet that price point. They don't want to renegotiate. So where we stand now, on Sunday, it's been told to me by both Section 2 statement and ENYNAHOA that they've both requested state mediation. The state had asked if they could get involved, but they can't unless both sides file for mediation. They hope to meet in the near future to work some sort of arrangement out to get more officials back on the ice so that more games can be covered, because it's only going to get busier from here on out. Now, the problem with that is whatever agreement they come to, ENY, if they even come to an agreement, mediation isn't a guarantee here, but even if they come to something, ENYNAHOA is saying it would be non-binding. These guys are deeming themselves independent contractors, these chapter members, so they still, at the end of the day, will have the right to decline or accept any assignment that gets put in front of them. So even if they come to agreement, there's no guarantee something gets worked out and gets more officials back on the ice.
Seems like we're going to be a far away, and hopefully it doesn't affect too many more games, because you get deep into the season and games are getting canceled. It's make affect teams' chances to play in the state tournament.
Yeah, and the word that's being used right now, especially with the game Saturday, is postpone, which would imply that they're going to make up this game at a later date. Now, there was an email sent out by one of those Hawks parents that we got where they kind of lay out the math of it, whereas it's going to cost almost more to rebook this game at M&T Bank Center than it would to just pay the refs what they're asking for now to skate while this is all under review by the education department. So it's a complex situation.
Yeah,
Both sides are making sure to get their statements heard in the public forum, and parents are making sure they're heard. They're sending emails to athletic directors and sports writers and, you know, Section 2. They want people to know that this has effects outside of just the officials in Section 2. And I think these first cancellations they're showing it. These effects are here, and they're real.
Yeah, so you'll be following that for us in the Gazette, and we'll talk more about it once we get a settlement, and hopefully we get a settlement. So have fun in Syracuse on Saturday, and you can follow Drew on X at
D. Wemple.
Thanks, Drew. Coming up, we'll talk with Will Springstead, executive sports editor of the Daily Gazette, and we'll talk about the passing of Siena men's lacrosse coach Liam Gleason. You're listening to the Parting Shots podcast.
Hi, this is Daily Gazette News Group reporter Ted Remsnyder. I hope you and your family have a wonderful holiday season and a prosperous and healthy 2026.
Stay informed with the Daily Gazette's e-edition. Download our app, sign up to receive our newsletters, and enjoy exclusive reader rewards when you join our growing community today. Head over to www.dailygazette.com to check out our membership plans. And remember, when credibility matters, trust the Daily Gazette. Welcome back to the podcast. A very sad day here in the Capital Region on late Wednesday afternoon. that we learned that the passing of Siena men's lacrosse coach Liam Gleason at the age of 41 as a result from a fall at his home on Sunday. And there was just like a significant damage, brain damage, and just unfortunate tragedy that is really affecting everyone here in the Capital Region. And Will Springstead, executive sports editor of the Daily Gazette, who covers college lacrosse for us, is joining me now. And Will, I mean, we talked earlier on Wednesday, and we had a tape, and we now have obviously since we learned what happened. Just devastating. There's no other way around it.
Devastating is absolutely the word, Ken. And the tributes that are now coming out for Liam are just spot on. I have only spoken with him at practices and in games, but you could see that Liam had a joy for life and a joy for coaching young men in lacrosse, and that came through in just about every sentence that he ever said in front of me.
I mean, obviously, everybody at Siena, I mean, they had a press conference Wednesday evening at Siena, and even Scott Marr, who was coached, had Liam as an assistant coach there before he took over Siena. I think he played for him too, right?
He did.
Yeah, he was there. I mean, it brought everyone together. Just so sad. In reading Mike McAdam's art story that's online at DailyGazette.com and in Thursday's print edition, you never know. And
you don't. It is so sad. And I do love having just. I was out at a game myself, so I just read Mike's. Story just before you were now speaking, but I'm not surprised also to see Scott mention that, you know, he was a big goof, a big lovable teddy bear, and how much he loved the program. When a couple years ago, you and your listeners may recall, UAlbany and Siena played a regular season game, which hadn't been done for some time, and they noted all the connections on the Siena coaching staff to UAlbany. And then again, this past spring, when Siena played UAlbany in the first round of the NCAA, you could hear the genuine warmth from Scott Marr about how he felt for Liam and how tickled he was that Liam got this team to the NCAAs, because he knew the work that he put in, and he knew that Siena deserved it, and a lot of that is because who led them.
Yeah, I mean, I think if they're not scheduled to play, I haven't really looked at the schedule. I don't know if the schedule's come out yet, but I think if you want to do this right in honoring Liam, play every year. Liam Gleason Cup.
The Liam Gleason game. Absolutely. Yeah. That thought occurred to me, too. I'm like, you know, he means – as much to the UAlbany program as he does to the Siena program. Was a graduate of UAlbany, assisted there for 6 years, got them in the ends, helped get them in the NCAAs for those six mm-hmm. years. There are some heavy hearts over at UAlbany too. And I think you're absolutely right. Put it on, make that game happen every year, and remember Liam.
Yeah, you just, you know, play one. Yeah, obviously, you had the situation at the Albany Cup between the Siena men and UAlbany men's basketball team, but that's gotten resolved. Let's get this game. Let's make sure this happens every year. Doesn't have to be the season opener, but, you know, find a way to get it done.
You can carve out one of your non-leaguers for a friend, not just of the two teams, but of the entire lacrosse community. I'm follow all the lacrosse things, and tributes are coming in from across the country. If they met Liam, they liked him.
Yeah. Now, I mean, we got to get reality here. What happens now for Siena? I mean, who takes over?
Logically, Schenectady native Tim Cotton, I'm not sure he's a native. I know he's a high school graduate. Schenectady High School's all-time leading scorer and graduate, Tim Cox, who has assisted Liam in all 8 years that Liam had been at Siena, and was assistant, and just this early this fall was named the associate head coach. So it would be a logical move for Siena. And again, as we said in our earlier taping that won't go, you know, now that you start the season in February, the clock's ticking. And you're coming up on your season. So I imagine Siena will not do anything out of the ordinary, and they will name Tim Cox as acting head coach or head coach. And certainly Liam spoke very highly of Tim, and it's not obviously how anyone would want the job, but I imagine it will be Tim's turn to take over a program that Liam left in very good shape. I should mention also, a few weeks ago, Siena came out with the recruiting class that Liam got, and it's eye-opening. You know, maybe that was in the works before Siena made the NCAAs, but it obviously helped, and he's got the Siena program in a good spot.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Siena will make any announcement on that. Maybe they'll wait till after the new year, and maybe they've told Tim, you're going to be the head coach. We just don't want to announce anything at this point, just out of respect for the Gleason family and the friends. So, I mean, it's just, I think they don't need to rush to make this announcement.
That could be too, yeah.
I mean,
so long as your players know who's in charge. Yeah. I suppose you're right.
I mean, there's no textbook or handbook on how to handle these things. I mean, you don't prepare yourselves for this kind of situation, and it's sad. It's very sad.
Absolutely. So. You know, before the holidays and before Siena students are taking exams, it's not going to be an easy time for anyone on that campus. Yeah.
I mean, they played the women's basketball game Wednesday night against New Haven. I mean, I don't know if there's any. For what I heard, maybe Mike had mentioned or somebody had mentioned that Liam would have wanted them to play.
Yeah, I did see that in Mike's story, and from what I know of Liam, that's absolutely true. He would have said, you know, let's not get all maudlin, and you know, let's play the games, and I can absolutely hear those words coming out of his mouth.
Yeah.
But yes, I guess now we wait to see what tributes and what remembrances will happen as a result of this. And there will be several.
Yeah.
Because he meant a great deal to a lot of people in this area.
At 11 o'clock on Saturday for the funeral at UHY Center. I mean, he leaves behind a wife and three children, breaks my heart. Breaks my heart.
Absolutely.
So, well, I appreciate you doing this. I know this is really, you know, not what we expected to be talking about on the podcast, but you know, when we got news on Sunday as to what happened with Liam falling at his home, and you know, it was just must have been a, you know, unfortunate fall, and you know, hopefully he rests in peace, and knowing that he's loved by everyone in the region with lacrosse, and not only here, but around the lacrosse, around the country in college lacrosse.
Yes, absolutely. And yes, it's as you say, you never know, and life is precious, and a sad reminder to us all.
Thanks, Will. Appreciate it. We'll talk soon.
All right. Thank you, Ken.
It's Will Springsteen. We're back to wrap up the podcast in just a moment.
If you really want to know what's going on in your community, you have to read the Daily Gazette. We don't take a side. We're right down the middle, and we're going to get to the truth. Our reporters and photographers are out in the field bringing you updates every minute with trust, accuracy, and integrity from the first page to the last page, independent, probing journalism. We're finding out what's going on in the community where nobody else is covering. It's who we are. It's what we do.
Hi, this is Daily Gazette News Group Deputy Online Editor Gino Diminich. I would like to wish you a happy holiday season and a great 2026.
Back to wrap up the podcast. The Week 13 winner in the Daily Gazette's You Pick'em Football Contest was Doug Reynolds of Clifton Park with a 14-2 record. Doug wins a $100 Price Chopper Market 32 gift card. Congratulations, Doug. The VIP winner was Gazette Executive Sports Editor Will Springstead with a 12-4 record. He is now 120-73-1 on the season. I went 10-6 to improve to 131-62-1. I am tied for first place. I'm in a four-way tie with John Keller of KDO Burns, Matt Maggiotta of S&G Roofing, and Paul Little of Emmerich Sales and Service. Dwayne Leach, Jim, and Jim DeMarco are tied with 130 wins. Scott Lucier of Capital A and GMC has 129. Nick Platel, Grand Premier Tire, has 126. Andrew Krauts of Glenville Beverage has 125. And, of course, Will Springstead with 120. I'll announce the You Pick'em Football Contest winner's name, and that winner's name will appear in Thursday's Daily Gazette. To play, go to dailygazette.com and click on the You Pick'em Football banner. Just because COVID-19 mandates are easing, that doesn't mean you should relax. Be vigilant. If you have not gotten vaccinated or received a booster shot, please do so. Do it for yourself, do it for your family, and do it for your friends. Nurses rock, and vaccines do not cause autism. Don't forget to download the Daily Gazette app and sign up for our e-edition so you never miss the headline. Subscribe today at www.dailygazette.com. We have a lot of great specials going on. When credibility matters, trust the Daily Gazette. That wraps up another edition of the Parting Shots podcast. I want to thank Nick Young, Brandon Burr, Parker Lindauer, Tony Macy, Maddie Leaney, Stephanie Bork, Drew Wemple, and Will Springstead for being a part of the show. If you have questions or comments about the podcast, email them to me at shot, that's S-C-H-O-T-T, at dailygazette.com. Follow me on X, Threads, and Blue Sky at Slapshots. The views expressed on the Parting Shots podcast are not necessarily those of the Gazette News Group. The Parting Shots podcast is a production of the Gazette News Group. I'm Ken Schatz. Thanks for listening, and I'll catch you next time. From the Parting Shots podcast studio in Schenectady, New York, good day, good sports.